Hey, this is Patreon supporter Sam Squanch, quite possibly the scruffiest looking nerf herder in Fort Worth, Texas. Lock S foils in attack position and stay on target. You're listening to Ice Cave Radio.
Ice Cave Radio is proudly sponsored by Invasion Comics and Cards. Located in Richmond Hill, Ontario, just minutes north of Toronto, Invasion carries one of the largest inventories of Star Wars Unlimited singles, and yes, we're shipping all across North America. Invasion hosts a wide array of events, from weekly casual play to higher stakes tournaments. Go to invasioncnc.ca and use code ICECAVE5 to score 5% off your Star Wars Unlimited singles and 3% off Star Wars Unlimited sealed product. Welcome, friends, to another edition of Ice Cave Radio, episode number 45, this time brought to you by, and I mean it, Invasion Comics and Cards in Richmond Hill, Ontario, just a few minutes north of Toronto. So I want to welcome and thank Invasion Gaming for supporting the channel. And I have been there, I have played there. Great people, great inventory for Star Wars Unlimited. I cannot stress enough. When it comes to ripping product and having like a big time stock of all kinds of games, they do not shy away. They get as much as possible, and they also try to fill out those singles. So go check out invasioncnc.ca. They do ship all around North America. I just want to go a little overboard there for our first one and welcome Invasion into the Ice Cave crew. Great people. I cannot stress it enough. Like, these are people whom I've spoken to many, many, many times. I've been there. I've met them. Good people who honestly say that their focus is on community, growing games, and just getting stuff to people and supporting it that way. So welcome. That's it. That's all. How are you boys doing?
I'm good. I've never been to Canada, but now I know that when eventually I do travel up to the frigid north, my very first stop, as soon as I get off the airplane, I'm going to jump in like an Uber or a taxi or whatever they have up there. I don't know. It's probably all the same stuff. I'm going to say, take me immediately to Invasion Comics and Cards. That's where I want to go. I got to buy cards. I'm going to play some stuff. I can sleep later. I have to get to Invasion now.
You should. You should. And the thing about it is that I'm probably picking you up from the airport because, yeah. I mean, I'm not
going to. The end of my joke was going to be, and then the cab driver would say, sir, this is Vancouver.
Sir, this is a Wendy's.
I was going to say that for, you know, as somebody who's been to Canada, the funniest line for me there was whatever they have up there, because we all know that you ride moose in Canada. Like, that is,
I was trying to avoid that, you know,
but
because like I grew up in. So the funny thing is, I grew up in Wisconsin and Minnesota, Wisconsin until I was 13. And then I moved to Minnesota, and I've never been to Canada. I was so close. I've been to the boundary waters. I've been to the very boundary between the United States of America and Canada. I have not crossed over.
Ever?
Not yet. No.
You've never been to Canada? Well, you can't.
I've never been to Canada.
You've lived in Minneapolis or Minnesota, which is basically like Diet Canada. Like, that's all it is. It's just...
I don't know. Canada
with
worse healthcare, maybe.
That is very true. That is very true. I have... Some of my best friends live in Minnesota. I'm there 3 times a year, possibly more. I love it there. If I were to move, I would move to Minnesota.
Nice.
It is nice.
I like it there quite a bit too.
It is nice. But yeah, this is a Star Wars podcast. And
yeah, you wouldn't know it.
Well, you would. I mean, to
it's
a degree.
The Visit Canada podcast.
Visit Canada.
No, it's
from the Tourism Board
Visit
of Canada.
Minnesota podcast. Listen, I just want to say that the folks at Invasion are in fact fantastic. I meant to meet them in Los Angeles, but unfortunately, weather prevented me from doing so. And then I was also just going to drive up there. I'm within driving distance. I'm like 5 hours away. And I said, hey, you know, I want to drive up there. And Flake said, under no circumstances whatsoever are you allowed to ever set foot in Canada once again. Mm-hmm. I endured you and your family for a weekend, and I will not have it. I will not do it. And so,
fair enough.
Naturally, we're going to do it again this summer.
Your family's welcome. You are not. I just want to clarify.
Wow.
That.
That's fair.
Yeah. What are we talking about this week?
We're talking about a lot of Star Wars stuff. You know, the usual, the hot topics, the headlines, the strategies, the community issues, everything surrounding Star Wars Unlimited and more. And we've got a lot of that stuff to talk about today. I'm excited. Not the issues, but just community things, headlines. We've got a little bit of everything this episode. It's going to be a good one.
Very good one.
One of the other things that we always do is we have this amazing poll. We do it weekly. It is very, very well known. It is the cave poll. However, before we dive right into that, I just want to say that this week in particular, we did an amazing thing, which is going to be perfect for our audio listeners, which is we asked a question entirely based on visuals with no naming convention.
It's all right. It's all right. Because so, we are a multimedia entity here. We need the audio and the visual. And I'm ready to give accurate descriptions of everything.
That was going to be my setup. I said, I cannot wait for us to either describe or make noises that are akin to
visuals. That's fine. I thought about this when I was making that in mind.
You know, why don't we, you know, speaking of the audio stuff, why don't we jump to the cave poll of the week?
What a rendition of that. The cave poll this week is brought to you by... Now, if you hear that noise, I could only imagine what goes through your mind as to what the visual representation of that was. It's nonetheless, it is in fact the Wampa Radio, not what we're called anymore. Ice Cave Radio.
I was going to say.
That's a callback. It is Ice Cave Radio.
Don't tase me, Lucasfilm.
Yeah, cave poll of the week, and it was in fact a visual clue for using a Jeopardy reference, but nonetheless, this is the new technology we have access to, because we've abandoned the Twitter poll, and we're now a straw poll type of team, but this one is a Doha poll. This is a Doha poll, and Doha's poll this week is as such. Which image best describes your last game of Star Wars Unlimited? So your options are, and I'm gonna go with you, Charmer, for the audio representation, and Doha, you will give the brief description of what the picture is. So option one was Charmer.
I could just say this is where the fun begins.
You could say that. That's fair.
I didn't know if you wanted me to just do like sound effect style audio or if you want me to say the lines. So I guess I'll do a little of both.
I like the sound effects. I can't wait for some of the other ones. Let's do that. it's the famous, you know, grin of Anakin Skywalker. These are all Anakin Skywalker images, by the way. It's kind of like which Anakin face suits you best emotionally based on your last game of Star Wars Unlimited. But like it's the typical smiling one, you know, right at the end, right at the beginning of Revenge of the Sith. Not the end of Revenge of the Sith. Wasn't a lot of smiling going on then, but the beginning of Revenge of the Sith, when he was like, this is where the fun begins.
Yep.
Little did he know all the fun he would not be having over the next two hours or so.
Option two, Charmer.
So sound effect wise, I would say,
It's, but, you know,
if I was going to add a line, it would be his inner monologue saying, I'm actually a Jedi Master, even if they won't recognize me as one.
Yeah. So this is kind of a passive Anakin face. You know, it's sort of neutral. I wanted to include one that was just kind of neutral, you know, middle of the road one. I think it's where he's, you know, being escorted on to meet General Grievous again towards the beginning of the film. Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith. So, but you know, the main point is that it's kind of a passive expression.
Option 3, quite possibly, is the most intriguing to me. Charmer, if you'll indulge us. Okay. All right.
Wow.
Doha, the descriptor?
Well, it is a view looking up towards Anakin as, I believe in this frame, he's about to swing his lightsaber down on Obi-Wan during their fight. But, you know, his neck's kind of bunched up. He's got kind of that expression that makes that sound Charmer was talking about. And, you know, that was just one where it's kind of the wild card, right? Where it's like, you know, what do you get out of the expression? If it speaks to you visually, then pick it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Option four, Charmer, please.
Pretty good. Yeah, it's the scene where he's like, what have I done, after he knocks Mace Windu. Or no, he kind of like, you know, he cuts off Mace Windu's hand, right? And then Mace Windu gets knocked out the window by Emperor Palpatine's lightning. And he's like, oh, what have I done? You know, but he's you know, he's not just sad. He's hysterically sad. He's like, what have I done? Now I'm going to have to live with the consequences. And we've all had turns like that in every card game. So I felt like it was an appropriate one.
Option five.
I need to pull the mic away from my face for this one.
Headphone warning.
Okay, that didn't make it through your filters, so if you can,
my filter is doing exactly what it's supposed to do, because I made the sound my kids make in the background, obviously.
No, that did not make it through at all. So how about you muffle it?
Wow.
Yeah, it was more like,
that's impressive.
I hate you.
Wow, I'm shocked that didn't pick it up. That is outstanding.
That was crazy. I was really impressed by that.
Technology.
That was a big microphone moment there. Yeah.
But you hit it spot on. You know what this is.
Oh, yeah. It's the I hate you, you know, sign where he's like, he's just mad.
Mm-hmm.
He lost a few limbs. He's about to get
burned. The high ground.
He's just upset. Yeah. We've talked about that before. You know, my theory with Anakin and the high ground, right? Or Obi-Wan the high ground.
Yeah.
Because when he was fighting, stop me if I've told this one, but when he was fighting Maul, Darth Maul, right? Like, you know, he did not have the high ground. In fact, he was hanging from that thing and Maul had the high ground, but he was able to like pull himself up and flip and like cut Maul in half and all that. And I guarantee you, as Darth Maul was like tumbling in two pieces down that, you know, wherever he tumbled down, I don't know, the garbage chute, whatever that was in there. Obi-Wan thought to myself, I must never teach anyone else how to do this, just in case.
Just in case.
And then fast forward a few movies later to Revenge of the Sith, you know, and he's got the high ground. He's like, hey, you know, I've taught you a lot of things, Anakin, but I haven't told you what to do if your opponent has the high ground yet. And that's why he's so confident. That's why he's like, it's over. I've got the high ground. Because that was the one technique he didn't teach Anakin. Anakin tried it.
Oh, man.
Wasn't trained. That's what happened, yeah.
Sometimes you have to keep these little things in your back pocket because you never
know. It goes all the way around.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I always took it as, because you're right, Obi-Wan does not have the high ground. I always took it as Obi-Wan spent his career after that honing how to never lose from that same position. Like, it worked.
Oh.
But I don't want someone to get me by surprise either, so I'm going to learn how to defend against that.
Or is it easier to just not teach someone how to attack from that position at all?
Well, I mean, yeah, but that's one, assuming that your person you're training is going to turn on you, and two, that nobody else is going to teach that across the galaxy, or you could spend like literally your entire career just learning how to defend it, right? It's like, all right, I had a trick shot and I don't want that to happen to me, so I'm just going to be the best at defending it. And that's why, in my mind, he's so confident.
But then
he's
why
like,
did Anakin try it?
Because he's Anakin.
Why told him not to?
Why did Anakin? You could like that. You just summed up all of the Clone Wars series.
Why did Anakin
do that when anyone told him not to?
Yeah. That's welcome to enough. Star Wars fair colon. Enough. Why did Anakin? Question mark.
Fair enough.
Yeah. The whole that everyone's like a what if scenario. This is a why if like
it's
series.
A what if Anakin actually listened to somebody one time ever?
All right. Option six. Charmer. He last option.
So this one is very difficult for me to make a sound effect for because it's
like a harumph.
It is just silence. You know?
Like if I was going to make anything, it would be like a low kind of like growl because this is a scene where he's determining that somebody is a traitor, but in a far less flashy way than what we got in the sequel series, you know, with a cool stun baton and yelling the word traitor. This is more done with a look.
It is that scene where he's sort of staring off across Coruscant and upset about the state of things. But I saw it as sort of an expression of quiet rage, right? Like a single tear trickles down your cheek. It's like when you've just made that big mistake and you've lost the game and you reach across the table to fist bump your opponent. You're like, good game, you know, but inside you look like that, you know. So I felt like that was an appropriate expression that could represent your last game.
All right.
Okay, so it's Anakin being upset because he saw us littering. Got it.
Gotcha.
Kind of, yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, the traditional source of single teardrops, yes.
So the options that we all selected, I actually chose option six because my last game that I played, at least when I voted, it was I had just come back from a they're not called armories, but you know what I mean, my weekly play, and I ended up drawing against a Vader as Aiden, and it was, the first game was like a 35 minute thriller. The second game ended with like under a minute left, and it was 1-1, and then we just were like, okay, well, we both lose. But it was such a greasy game. So I chose option 6 because I was just like, I went through all of this, a 55 minute thriller for a tie, which is ultimately a loss, right? So it was just kind of one of those, like, what are they called? Hide the pain Harold type moves, like that kind of face of like, yeah, one of those. Yeah, that's what I selected.
That applies.
Yeah. Yeah. Option 6 for me. How about you, Doa?
Oh, I chose option 1, man. I was having I had a great time at my local last week. Oh,
for
last
sure
week.
You did. Yeah.
I cleaned up. I lost a single game all night. So that was fun. It was fun winning my Yeah, it's fun winning. I haven't won a local in a while, mostly because I just kind of take meme decks more than anything. I like to tinker and build, but this time I felt like I was building something good, and I think it turned out to be pretty good. Yeah.
Charmer?
I selected option 1 because I had just had a very successful draft. Extra happy that I selected option 1 because little did I know I was taking home my second showcase, but I hadn't opened it yet. So I went to my locals, much like what we were just talking about. And we had a draft. I went 3-0. I was on Red Tarkin again. I was not purposefully drafting it. It was just one of those things that kind of happened. My pack one pick one was a Seventh Sister, and the only villainy leader I had was Tarkin, so I was kind of forced down that path, but it worked out well. And yeah, I won five packs, and I was feeling really happy about myself, and then opened the packs a day later, and if you're in our Discord, you got to see the picture of the shiny showcase Hera that I opened. So yeah, one was my selection, and it was in fact where the fun began.
Big time. Big time. Let's go to the results, my friends, as the winner was precisely that. This is where the fun begins. 35.78% of the vote is that smiley Anakin having a good time, putzing around in his spaceship, his Jedi fighter. The second winner was a tie, or rather the second place was a tie between I don't know how to describe it, the one where he's, you know, bringing the lightsaber down, where his chin looks all crinkled. The other is him being presented to General Grievous. So he's kind of smug, like, you think you got me, but I got you kind of situation. The third place was the one I selected, which was the, like the Hide the Pain Herald kind of scenario at 15.6%. 8.26% was I Hate You and the Sheer Anger. And the 7.34% bringing up the rear was the what have I done kind of scenario. And that's fair, because sometimes players who bring IG-88 to the tournament and then go 0-3 will ask themselves, what have I done? So that's possible.
Hey, I'm going to bring Jyn Erso to a tournament tomorrow. So this if this poll had been a different week, although who knows? Well, we'll see, because I think it'll be fun trying. I mean, I've play tested a little bit and I'm like, oh, boy. But, you know. You can't just go and you know, beat people with Sabine every week. So I'm doing it for them, you know.
Not every week.
They deserve a chance.
Not every week.
Yeah. I mean, the store championship season's coming around the bend, so.
Yeah.
Get prepared. Let's move to headlines, friends, as I think the major headline of note is that there was a big time 5K that occurred in Kissimmee, Florida, and that was won by friend of the show, Guy Cohen. Guy Cohen is a Flesh and Blood professional who has won tournaments in Flesh and Blood, is incredibly proficient at that, and just decided to go and win a Star Wars tournament on Darth Vader. So congrats to Guy. Guy also mentioning to us at ICR that he got into Star Wars Unlimited because he found our podcast and just we convinced him to play. And there he is winning a 5K. So congrats to Guy Cohen.
Yeah, so where's our cut?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah. Come on, Guy.
I I have the desire to make the like Domino's meme, right? Where it's like Stark, excuse me. Well, maybe Stark. I don't know. It might have been the inspiration for me doing this, but I was also thinking about Flaker myself. But once somebody sees Star Wars for the first time, pick any one of us from the show, and then the end of the Domino's is Gee Wins kissing me.
Yeah, this all goes back. True. All goes back to when they announced the game, and then all the Domino's just fell that way.
You and I were messaging immediately.
The second, like, it happened. Fun fact for some who might not know, I got messaged by, I think, two or three people saying, do you want to do a Star Wars Unlimited podcast? And I declined them all because I was like, in my mind, there was only one person I wanted to do this podcast with, and it was Charmer. So to those other people, I apologize. And
see, my strategy was just to wait until somebody else started one and then ask to join it.
It worked.
Yeah. Oh. That's the way to go.
Speaking of the way, we do have spoilers to get into. So big thanks again to SwooDB, Parker. If you haven't, we did have a Hello There episode with Parker. You can check it out here on the channel. Nonetheless, who wants to hit the first wave? I think it's fair to say we are just in spoiler season. It is just spoiler season through and through. It might not be as hot and heavy, but we're getting a nice little slow trickle. So who wants to kick off the first one?
I suppose I can do it.
Yeah, hit it.
I mean, after all, this is the way that we do this around here. So without further ado, the first spoiler was, this is the way. This is a two-cost heroism event, so single aspect heroism. And it has the Mandalorian tag, which is, I feel, going to be far more relevant for this set and future sense now. It's very exciting. It says, search the top eight cards of your deck for up to two Mandalorian and or upgrade cards, reveal them, and draw them. Now, this isn't uncommon, which does kind of make sense just because this is a bit more targeted than some of the other ones, because obviously this is very similar to effects that we saw in set one. But I feel like the Mandalorian tag is, it's more targeted in terms of power level. It hasn't really been on any what I would describe as throwaway cards yet, but also it's flexible. So instead of just finding units, for example, this lets you find anything with the Mandalorian tag. That might be other events, that could be units, that could be upgrades, and it also has upgrade cards included. So when you're thinking about uses for this card, for example, this could find you a traitorous and a unit. That's a pretty powerful effect for just two cost. I really dig it. I think that this will likely find a home in a couple of decks.
I think it's good. I mean, like, it's a two drop uncommon. It's a possible that, like, having this and just playing it in a slower matchup, let's say, you can just do this on your first turn and find what you need, your three drop, your four drop, and just maybe fix up a curve if you don't have it. This is just me speaking, and I know that I'm not any kind of brilliant deck builder, but I always find that cards like this I feel like it's, I don't want to say it's wasted real estate, but it's real estate that I would rather use for either removal or another unit or something a little bit more, or like a sideboard tech or something like that. So tutors that aren't guaranteed tutors, like the search the top 10, unless you're dropping a body with them, like Vader, for example, which is we can see the power level of that. I'm always a little reluctant when cards like this, like Prepare for Takeoff or things like that, or even the four drop Tarkin, they kind of do a similar thing. They never really wheel into relevance. And that is even on Tarkin, who drops a body on the same in the same vein. So as cool as this card is and as cool as it looks, maybe it just doesn't see play. And that's unfortunate to think about.
No, so this is why I was saying I think this is powerful and it will see play. I think the one thing that we have to keep in mind is that with the new set and the bounty mechanic, and specifically I'm thinking about cards like Wanted that we've already seen, I expect that we are going to have more upgrades kind of like Entrenched, also like Wanted, where you're going to be playing them either as removal or as a detriment to your opponent. And so when I think about it from that perspective, it's like, okay, I can pay two to potentially draw two removal cards. Or again, because Wanted, for example, is a zero cost card, if you are building a deck around collecting bounties and want it as a big part of your game plan and you just don't have one, you know, finding it for essentially paying the aspect tax, right? Like, okay, I'll pay two more, but I get to just fish one from the deck. And then because it's free, I get to play it. I think it'll smooth a bunch of things out. And then knowing that, like, if I do draw this in the opening hand, I can just resource it. I feel more comfortable with this one. I think that the other one struggled because they were specifically units. And this, again, because it's more broad and open, it's upgrades and or anything with the Mandalorian tag. I think that this is the first one where I've been like, OK, I can actually see this one finding a home potentially.
Yeah, I think the other part of it, too, is that it seems to be it's becoming a standard where you pay to search the top eight for two of something, right? Because this is almost identical to the prepare for takeoff card from the first set that lets you search for two vehicles. So it seems like this is kind of going to be the standard search card. But I think this kind of card could work well as a card you play later in the game in a slower kind of deck to find like your finishers, that kind of stuff, you know, where you have like the two resource real estate to do that. It's not a turn one type of play, right? You can't afford to not play a unit or not play something immediately board impacting in most decks on turn one. So this is going to be one of those cards where it's like you put like two of them in your deck and then you play it late game to find the stuff that you really need to close it out. So yeah, we'll see how usable it ends up being. But I think there's a spot for these cards. I think it's one of those things where it's like people need to get good at knowing when to use them before you see them be really valued.
Doa, would you like to do the next one? Because I think that this card is cool as all hell.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's Dr. Evazin. Evazin. Dr. Evazin? I've always said Evazin or something like that.
I thought it was Evazin. Evazin. I call Evazin, it. So, yeah. So we have three different Evazin pronunciations here. I call
everyone
it Evazin.
Everyone learned that name when they were kids, and they all came up with their own pronunciation for it.
Yeah. You know, Dr. That's what I've kind of learned, right? Let's call him Dr. Yeah. E.
Dr. Evazin, Dr. Evazin, I don't know. Either way, you know who he is, right? He's got the, you know, he's got the death sentence on in 12 systems, right? This card says wanted in 12 systems, but we know what they want him for. They want to kill him. He costs two. He's a cunning villain. He's a 3/3 shielded. That's right, a 3/3 shielded for two. But there's a catch. He has a bounty on him. Remember, ready up to 12 resources, which is great thematically because he's wanted in 12 systems, you know, so it's kind of a nice little flavor there. It essentially says, you know, ready all your resources, right? Because there's very few games where you get to like 12 or more. It does happen, but it's rare. So, you know, potentially a big drawback if somebody's able to take him out, they essentially, you know, can spend the resources, finish him off, get all the resources back, play more things. And as long as they've got the cards in hand, that can be pretty bad for you. At the same time, I think a 3/3 shielded for two is potentially very strong early on. So in some aggressive cunning decks, I wouldn't be surprised to see him show up if you're just trying to be really low to the ground, really race your opponent and be like, yeah, sure, get all your resources back on like turn three or four or something. You know, who cares? Because you're going to be pretty much dead by then anyway, right? So we'll see. It's a very intriguing card, but I think it could see some play.
It, you know, like when you and I were sort of making that Jyn Erso deck, we're talking about like, hey, what's a two drop and then how do you upgrade on top of it or how do you make it even harder to kill and things like that. And the fact that it's got a shield, it'll trade early. It'll keep you alive. It'll value trade. But then it gives you an opportunity as well to go ahead and just upgrade it and give it some extra juice. But beyond that, you could be very smart in how you use this. If your opponent grabs initiative and then you choose the Evazin play to trade and they ready all the resources, those resources that they're readying up are relatively useless at that point. So you can circumvent it. And I think that what people might be scared of is this is like, well, what if I trade into this and then they just spend another three or four resources redeveloping the board? Well, if you're smart about it or if you are careful about it, yeah, there's obviously going to be some pitfalls around it and some bad plays. Like if this gets takedown or something, like it's a free removal and all the resources come back off of a takedown, so it can be detrimental. But the problem is I think the last part of this is that it's the work you're gonna get done by the time they're able to do that. So if you could get 6 to 9 points of damage in off of it, I think that you're ahead of the game.
Yeah, so this card is outstanding. I love this card. I love it in aggro, I love it in control. I love it in cheeky, cunning decks because the ways that you can utilize it are, in fact, very cunning. I like it in aggro for exactly what you were saying, Flake. A lot of times this will be mitigated by the fact that it's probably going to die on turn four and you're trying to stretch to kill them or get as close as you can by then anyway. I like it because, as you said, like, yeah, it could just die to a takedown and then they get to ready all their resources, but they also spent a takedown to kill your two drop, yeah, right?
I think I feel like pretty good about that.
That's a key piece of removal. Like, right now, with the worst case scenario I can come up with in terms of removal used on it, it would be the new calculated lethality, which would theoretically remove this. And then also, if the shield is still on it, grant at least one experience token. And even then, like, you got a couple of turns out of it because that's a four cost removal. So they'd have to start their turn to remove your two drop. Yeah, they get some bonus and they get all their resources back, but you still had tempo. The real reason that I think this card is outstanding is because it's, again, it's a very aggressive drop. It'll be helpful there, but it's also good in control because you can get a ton of trade value mileage out of this. The 3-3 shield means that it is probably eating 2 to 3 units. If your opponent is not attacking into this and they're not wasting removal on it, and you as the control player are free to use this to establish board control, then, you know, you can trade into something, eat your shield, trade into a 2-3 cleanly, and then maybe trade into one other thing. Or, and this is my favorite part because it's in cunning, there's a lot of ways you can bounce this. And I could totally see a world where pirated starfighter becomes a lot more playable because you might have this as your turn one, you get two trades out of it, and then you just play an overstated pirated starfighter and this goes back to your hand and you never give them the 12 resources readied, right? Yeah. There is a lot of ways around things. And again, worst case scenario, you draw it late game, you just resource it, right? That's the beauty of this game. You can kind of adjust accordingly. I think this card is very, very good.
Think about just Asteroid Sanctuary if you're playing Cunning and then just like exhausting a unit that might threaten it and then give it a shield again, or give it a second shield.
It'd be very annoying, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's pretty solid card in my opinion. All right, let's move to the last one. Again, we are currently recording. It's just after 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on April 24th, so anything that we do not have here, we are not responsible for. So, Pike Sentinel, that is the next card, a 2-drop, it's Vigilance, it's Villainy, it's a ground unit called Pike Sentinel, a 2-3 Underworld ground unit, and it is just a 2-3 Sentinel. And this is a card that I was talking about this multiple times. I'm like, I think Palpatine is just waiting for those earlier drops to sort of help sponge up a lot of the early game aggression that usually costs Palpatine the game. The reason why Palpatine might kind of butt heads with or not have a really fighting chance against a Sabine is because oftentimes as you're establishing the board early, they're just plowing into your face and getting in as much work done while you're trying to establish a board, playing your ramp cards and such, really not threatening anything. And by the time that you do turn the corner, you're at like 25 damage, and then they're just going to for a cause you to death. This at least is somewhat of a saving grace for Palpatine Vigilance. As a Pike Sentinel, the only issue is that it's not an Imperial, if that really matters, but it is a 2-3 built-in Sentinel with Villainy on it, which means that you can yoink it with Vader, and that is also helpful. So now your Vader play could be just an Imperial Guard or a Royal Guard, or maybe it's a Pike Sentinel and a 1-drop if you have one, like a TIE-LN maybe you have or something like that or whatnot. But nonetheless, I think that Pike Sentinel is okay. I think it's a good start.
It's great. It's a 2-3 Sentinel for two. It's amazing.
I love so this good card too. It is going to be a limited all-star because it's a common.
Oh yeah.
I think that the two people who come from set one that like this the most as leaders are Aiden, because the only drawback is this is not an Imperial, and I think of the choices she cares about that the least, if I'm being honest. And so I think you're fine there. And even if that did somehow matter with your build for Aiden, there's a lot of other units you're already naturally running in Aiden that have Imperial anyway, so it's not the end of the world. The other one that I think would love this is actually Vader, specifically, this is actually timed very well. Specifically, if you're trying to play something like what Guy played, right? If you're trying to play a Vigilance Vader and you have this kind of like early tool until you can get more things going, it helps. But more so, it's another villainy card that you'll want to play later at a cheap cost where you can activate your leader ability. That's what I've been struggling with when I try to build like the Darth Vader leader, is I always want to say, all right, what's enough like low cost villainy cards I can put in so I can always turn on his ability, because his ability is really powerful. And this is going to be a great cheap way to do it where, you know, even if this just dies immediately, if it soaks up one big attack, it's done its job potentially as well. So that was the two things that I thought of immediately, was Aiden loves this, but I think there's a world where like a Vigilance Vader loves this as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of decks on the villainy side that would just like to have an early Sentinel too, to just slow things down and set things up. Like Thrawn would be another one potentially if you're running Vigilance with Thrawn. So yeah, I think any slower deck on the villainy side, you're probably going to see some of these guys in there. I think it's a good replacement for the 1/4 speeder bike with Grit.
Oh, the Scout Bike Pursuer.
Scout Bike Pursuer, yeah. Because it's got good stats. It's like a decent card, but like what you really want is something like this that just stops people, right? You really want like a speed bump, you know? So I think Pike Sentinel's great. And we're definitely gonna see in a lot of decks. It's really good.
All right, well that would do it. It is the three cards that we're gonna get from the Shadows of the Galaxy expansion, which is set to release, what is it, July, I think? Is that when it's coming out?
Yes. I believe so.
We don't have the exact date, but we know roughly because they were targeting, three sets per year. So that means one every 4 months. That one released on March 8th. So, you know, sometime in July.
Okay. Well, then. We do, in fact, have an episode today. That is, we already know that. But the episode,
this is all made up. It's in your head.
Yep.
That's right.
It's all fake.
It's at the end of the episode, Flake wakes up and he's like, oh, it was all a dream.
It was all a dream. Let's talk a little bit about the tournament scene and what just happened this past weekend, and maybe discuss a little bit about the meta and the gameplay and the decks that made it through. I think it was very exciting. It's precisely it. And let's kick it off a little bit by talking about what the breakdown was of this tournament. And I want to give some props here to PPG because I did lift some of the graphics off of their Instagram. So thank you very much for putting these together, first of all, as well as the tournament. So A+ to them. Tournament looked great. By all means, I think everyone had a good time. But the total breakdown of this particular tournament, I don't think that there was too much surprise. But what I'm liking here is that it's starting to spread out a bit. We didn't have that big Boba Fest as we did last time, but Boba Fett is the most represented once again at 37 heroes.
Yeah, and that's not a huge surprise. I mean, the ECL version of Boba Fett is pretty easy to pilot. It's got a lot of flexibility in terms of how you can approach different matchups. It's just a great deck, right? And it's one of the few that can kind of go toe to toe with the common Sabine list right now, which is the Sabine ECL list. So you know, a lot of people are comfortable playing that. Then again, a lot of Sabines out there feel like they can beat it. And sure, sometimes you can just run over the Boba Fett twice in a row and take the match. That does happen. So you see a good representation of Sabine there as well. What's been interesting for me to watch is over the course of like the tournaments that we've had and just looking at locals, watching Vader representation like slowly creep up, because it was like a few, and then like it feels like every week I just see one or two more people on Vader. Like people are starting to go over to the dark side, man, because they're seeing how strong this leader is, and the whole tournament was won by a Vader, as we're going to talk about. So it's interesting to see. It's interesting also to see a little bit of Aiden Versio kind of falling off a little bit. Emperor Palpatine's kind of falling off a little bit. There was some representation there. There's a Palpatine in the top 16, but you know, overall these like heavy control decks are really struggling against the Sabines, and that, you know, that creates situations where you know, they're going to fall off. Sabine's going to go up. Fett's going to pop up to sort of counter that. That's going to go down. But in the middle of all this, you've got Vader, who can just kind of beat everybody, it seems like. You know, people are starting to figure that one out. So the next few weeks are going to be very interesting to watch as far as tournament representation goes. There's a 4K in Southern California that I'm going to be playing at on May 5th, and going to be watching that one closely to see how the decks break down there.
Yeah, in Richmond, Virginia, there's going to be at SCGCon, I believe, a 4 or 5K on May 4th as well. Mm-hmm. What you said about the certain heroes just kind of slowly creeping up the ranks, that's me with Leia. Like, I feel like the more and more tournament reports I see, I see not like in leaps and bounds, but like no one's figured something out with Leia, but people are starting to sort of learn that attacking twice is pretty, like twice at once is pretty filthy when you're a player who's like, okay, you'll attack with one, I'll remove the other. And all of a sudden, both of the units have just kind of crashed into you.
And she can beat Sabine, too. That's the thing, is that she's got, where Sabine closes games out quickly, Leia doesn't have as much consistent damage turn to turn, but she can have big, big burst damage turns that, you know, far exceed what Sabine can put together and win that way. So definitely a dangerous deck, for sure. I always get a little bit worried when I play against Leia's.
I completely agree. I absolutely agree. Charmer, anything popping out to you about the breakdown of the 5K in Kissimmee?
In terms of the total breakdown, if anything, I'm surprised we didn't see more Boba Fett, just because, according to the internet, the sky was falling and Boba Fett was it. It was the one truth, and it was going to be the end-all be-all. And so, even though I didn't believe that, I think sometimes it takes an event or two for things to kind of course correct. And I'm surprised that it already fell this much. Again, obviously still the most represented deck, but I just honestly expected a bigger gap than this. The other thing that does jump out to me is the low number of like Luke and really just kind of the heroism side of control in general. I think that that's also a really underrated deck, and it's something that probably just needs more testing. Maybe set two is where things start to explode there, but pairing Luke or Chewie with some of the control elements, I still think is an incredibly powerful thing to do. And I'm just a bit surprised that we had five Lukes, we had three Chewies. You know, that's just not a lot. And
no IG-88s though.
I gotta push back on that a little bit, I think, and say I'm not surprised that the heroism control stuff is less represented, because I think on the control side, heroism right now just doesn't have the same quality of card pool that villainy does. And the biggest part of that is two biggest parts of that are Super Laser Technician and Overwhelming Barrage. Those two cards are so crucial for control, and heroism doesn't have access to either of those. So and you also kind of got to take like hero ability into account a little bit there. Palpatine is drawing you a card. Inversio is healing. There's nothing that gets in the way of that really happening, where Luke has to play a heroism unit that phase, have it live, then put a shield on it, and you've got like Truitt, whose ability on the leader side is not, you know, super useful on a turn-to-turn basis. You know, who else do we got?
It's Chewie. Chewie's the one that I'm most surprised. Chewie at three is what really jumps out to me.
I think it's because his ability is only truly active against aggressive decks or even mid-rangey decks if you have the initiative. Because if you don't have the initiative, it doesn't matter if you put down a Sentinel, because they've already attacked you with the thing that they wanted to attack you with first. So with Chewie, like, his ability's great, but if you don't get the initiative or you don't go first, it's basically turned off in a lot of cases. So I think that's the main reason with his thing. Because, yeah, it seems really good on paper, but then in function, it doesn't operate as well as you would hope it does. I'm not saying all these decks are lost causes. They're definitely not. And as a card pool increases, they're going to get better, you know? But in a set one meta, I think villainy has control, you know, kind of locked down.
Let's move to the top 16 of what we got to see in terms of how things sort of shook out, what the top 16 decks looked like after all the Swiss rounds. I believe there's like 145. It was a capped out tournament from what I understand. And the top 16 breakdown is as such. You have four Boba Fetts, four Sabine, three Darth Vaders, and a single of all the following: one Palpatine, Krennic, Luke, Leia, and Han. So, I said it earlier. I think that, I mean, four Boba Fetts, four Sabines, and three Vaders. I think that the continuing stock rise of Vader is what we're seeing here. But four Fetts, four Sabines in the top 16, I think that is like, they represent half the meta of the top 16, more or less. And I think that that's accurate. I think that that's a fair representation. They are arguably the best decks that are out there right now, or one of them. But a nice spread of everything else. We saw there's a Han in there. There's a Krennic in there. There's a Luke. There's my boy Palpy that's sticking around, which is great to see.
My boy Palpy.
He doesn't even answer my calls. Like, it doesn't even matter. Doesn't know I exist. But still, Palpatine.
He used to call you on his cell phone.
So, in terms of the top 16 breakdown, I think that the meta spread is actually quite healthy. And if you look at most games that come out, like, a lot of the do or die of new card games are the balance of the initial set. If people are just immediately turned off because it's a two deck system of this triangle, what we see here is that, yes, we had the eight Boba Fetts at a big tournament a few weeks ago, but look how things have evolved. And if you listen to us describe that episode 3 or 4 weeks ago, we told you that this was going to happen, that it wasn't just Boba Fett. That was just things are good. Like, nature is healing, ladies and gentlemen.
The other thing that isn't on this graph that's worth talking about too is the aspects that were used with these heroes. One of the Sabines was a cunning Sabine. It's a really wild cunning Sabine list too. It was piloted by I gotta look up his name. It was Frank Myers, and it's not how I would build Sabine, but you can't deny the results. It's really cool. It's a very more slower, mid-rangey tempo Sabine. It runs like the Autech Liberator gunship, like the Wookiee ship. That's like the 4 for a 3/4 with Saboteur? What is it? No, Ambush, right. I haven't used it in so long, I had to actually look it up. It runs Chewbacca. It runs a one change of heart in the main board. Like, it's a wild list, but it's, you know, it's just made to be slower, a little bit more mid-rangey. It's made to, I think, take on the Boba Fett's a little bit more toe-to-toe. I'm a big believer that Cunning Sabine is a great answer to Boba Fett. I 2-0'd a Boba Fett last week, and it felt easy, you know, with it. So I think he's definitely got something going here too. And I think that's something to think about too, when you talk about the health of the meta overall, is that we're seeing leader representation, but I think it really needs to be broken down even farther than that and talk about what aspect is being paired with the leaders. Because as certain ones get really strong, like obviously Boba Fett Command is very strong, we're going to see things like now Sabine is being paired with Cunning, because that's still strong. But it's stronger into Boba Fett, which was one of her weaknesses, right? So I think that's going to be a really fascinating thing to watch with this game in general, is the aspect changes that happen based on the meta. So definitely something to keep an eye on too, is don't just look at the leaders, look up the deck list and look at the aspects too. Like that Han Solo, that's not like Casino Han. That's not the one you see at all the locals because it's fun to play a lot of 7-drops. That's tempo aggression Han, you know? So there's a lot of neat stuff going on there aspect-wise, too.
This is what I just want to note before I want to hear from you, Charmer, obviously. But like, what I love about this is that it's just within each hero, there are these, like, micro metas that of, like, how to play them. And that is obviously not just an aspect thing, but like you said, Doa, the fact that you play Cunning Sabine very successfully, you beat the piss out of me all the time with it, but this other individual, Frank Myers, who brought this deck and is playing in like a weird, I say weird, an unorthodox way and seeing success, we can see that the latitude is not just from hero to hero. It's within the heroes themselves, of aspect to aspect and design to design. So I'm liking that, because you walk into a matchup and you see the hero, you're like, okay, are you... The first thing you say is, what are you playing? Sabine. Okay. Are you playing Sabine Cunning or this or what? Oh, I'm playing Sabine Cunning. Oh, okay. So it's going to be a standard. No, it's not even a standard aggro cunning. It's more of a mid-range control, kind of throw you off kilter. So there's so much unexplored territory here within all the heroes. And as I think we approach that new expansion, we might not even get to the point where everything is fully fully resolved and fully solved. But I mean, that's definitely pie in the sky kind of thought process. Is July so far away? But
sure,
here we are. It's the end of April. We've been playing this game for 2 months, and we're still seeing fluctuations within within all of these different decks and heroes.
I mean, I have very strong feelings about deck discussions. And we know that when we talk to each other, for those of you who are listening, if you could be a fly on the wall, we're constantly like, no, I think this. No, I think that, which is, again, part of the love of card games. And we all enjoy doing that. So first, I just want to say I do like that the top 16 breakdown ended up the way that it is. I think that it makes sense that you kind of have a big three, if you will, with Boba, Sabine, and Vader. And then you have a sprinkling in of a bunch of other leaders that I do think are viable. I really like the conversion rates on a lot of these as well. Again, I think that when you're considering that there was, what, like five Lukes and one of them made top 16. Again, that was an archetype that, you know, and I think Doa hit it on the head. I think that it's really just that the hero abilities are potentially what's lacking there, because I personally think Heroism Vigilance has some of the strongest units in the game. It's just that the leader support isn't necessarily there right now. So that's something to keep an eye on. But I just really like that we are seeing fluctuations and we are seeing these interesting pairings. Recently at Locals, I was telling somebody about a deck I wanted to build. And then I think I even mentioned it once to you, Doa, and you were like, yeah, you were thinking about the same thing, which was Vigilance Sabine, where you play Hyper Control and
you keep tapping them down, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so the game plan is just like, all right, I ping us both, but then I heal. I ping us both. Like, almost like a reverse Aiden. I think that there's still so much room to explore with set one, and we're going to see that as more of these events kick off before July hits.
I thought I was
down the road too. Yeah, as the card pool increases, like things like that are only going to get more viable, right? So there's such a evergreen potential with this game as far as the aspect changes and what you can do with some of the leader abilities. It's very exciting. But yeah, I am going to try that Control Sabine list. I got to give it a shot. That is a neat idea. It's funny that we ended up both thinking about that because Charmer touched on this. He and I have very different ideas about deck building, I think, in a lot of cases. But we both were on the same wavelength for that one. So we'll have to make two lists, and then there'll be totally different lists. But
I definitely want in on this because that idea was something that I had in my mind as well. Because like when I was playing Aiden, I was just like, why don't I just do damage? Like there's no criteria. Aiden needs to remove a unit off the board to heal one. This is just tap. And the best part about that, and this is what I've come to appreciate about certain leaders and their influence, is the fact that if you are kind of waiting out your opponent to see who blinks first regarding making a play, just having a leader that can just tap can just tap to pass priority back and put the onus back on your opponent to make a move that you can then respond to. If you're playing a control version of Sabine, you could just go, pass, and then maybe they do something and like, you know, just kind of mundane. And then you're like, all right, well, I'll tap my hero now back to you. And then they'll play something. You're like, then you'll play a removal. You'll play like a takedown or something. And it's like, cool. And off we go. Let's do something else.
Yeah. I'm going to build that list.
Is that our challenge now? All of us are going to build this like Vigilance Sabine control.
I mean, we are going to build versions. And then what's funny is I'm sure that Doa and I will have completely different versions because it's not that I think that it's funny because when him and I have discussions, I think what it comes down to is that we just have different play styles. So we look at the game differently, right? It's not that it's necessarily one is better than the other or one is right or wrong. It's just that we look at it through different lenses. And I would love to see us all three build a Vigilant Sabine deck and see where
it lands. Let's do that for next week. Okay, so here's what we're going to do on the show next week. We're each going to independently, without talking to each other, build Vigilant Sabine lists, and then we're going to and I'm going to make sure this doesn't happen. We are not allowed to talk about our lists until the show next week, and then we'll I'll unveil them at the, you know, in sequence, and we'll see how close or far apart they are. That sounds fun. Let's do it.
Mine's gonna suck so bad because I haven't, for the record, I haven't even played a single heroism hero yet in this game.
Oh wow! Yeah, well, you played a lot of control though, so yeah, you kind of have an idea about what you want to do.
Yeah, like I've done Vader, Palpatine. I've done obviously Aiden, but when it comes to playing heroes, man, like I don't know what it is. Heroism just, I just let you guys do that because, like, you know, Charmer's been pumping Sabine's tires for months, right? You're a great and excellent Sabine pilot as well, Doa, and like I just leave it to you. I'm just like, I'm gonna allocate my resources and my innovation to other types of heroes and trying to make other things work, and it's been fun. I just never even thought about giving Sabine a try. So
I'm already starting my deck right now.
No, you can't. You can't. There's no head starts. Darn
well,
it.
Why not? Why?
I guess
we've got all this time.
Well,
I'm distracting myself from paying attention to the show. But
fine.
I'm too intrigued.
Well, I just got word from my minions. They have. They shall double their efforts. That's what they're going to do. They're going to double their efforts.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
Good luck. Good luck, minions.
You know what? I think it's. I think I've been itching to open this. I've been holding on to this for 4 days, 5 days. So I want to open this. So we're going to do it. It is a. You hear that?
Hey! You hear that?
It's the sweet sound of Babu Freak saying, hey, hey. All right, let's open this. These are so scarce. And hard to come by, but we're opening it, baby. We're gonna open a an OP pack. I don't know what the best cards are in here. Are like, I'm not even talking about like dollar value, but I mean, is Bossk foil like the go-to? Is that the real deal?
Probably, but I
one right now. I'm gonna look.
I personally think that
it's gotta be Sabine, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Sabine's the best because, again, it's my favorite Star Wars character. So that I'm trying to be objective and not factor that in. I would say that, like, when it comes to the art, the ones that I like, not that the Bossk one is bad, but the ones that I really like, I think the General Veers is really good, and I really like the Yoda.
Yeah. Mm. All right, well, let's take a look. The first one is...
Yes, Sabine is the most expensive at the moment. Sorry, go ahead.
We got a Luke's lightsaber. We have a green squadron A-wing, and the juice behind it all is Schwing. Hey, a Yoda.
Oh, all right.
There he is, looking right at me. Like,
yeah. Staring into your soul.
Beautiful. I love these cards, man. I like these OP packs are just special sauce. I love it. Got a couple of minutes left here before we got to sign off, but ultimately, I mean, the tournament scene is such that, like, I just got off. I had a chat with Guy Cohen, who won the event. He's going to be on Hello There next week to talk about all this stuff, but I just said, I'm like, hey, let's just chat a little bit about this deck because I want to ask you some questions about it, and I'm not going to give away much of his spice or sort of his process, but ultimately, a lot of the discussion that he had about it, he is so confident that Vader is undoubtedly the best deck in the game, and he showed it by winning the tournament, obviously. But do you think that this creep up of Vader's are as a result of it's trying to answer the prevalent meta of Fett Sabine, or do you think that the Vaders are just inherently in a vacuum, a better deck and can just handle everything? I don't know if you guys have a thought on this.
I do have a thought. It's also timely because I haven't had a chance to throw it at you guys yet. I know that we've been playing. There's a deck that I want to test for an upcoming local event. You know, I shared with you guys, but one of my locals is doing a tournament on May 5th, Revenge of the 5th. And the winner is getting a lightsaber. And so I kind of want to win it. And
that's cool.
Now, granted, I was not on the same aspect combination, but I have landed on a Vader list that I think is really good at trying to capitalize on the big two in the meta, right? I think that ultimately what you're looking at with this rise of Vader is that when you build it, you can build it a number of ways, but you can definitely build it in a way where you can survive against Sabine, and still have a really good game plan against Boba Fett with their mid-range, because Vader is just a powerhouse when he hits the table, and he has an incredibly powerful leader effect. Now, granted, it is conditional, right? You do have to have those villainy units, but it does damage to the base and to units. So it helps you establish board control and create some sense of inevitability. The fact that he comes online a turn sooner than Palpatine is a pretty big deal. The fact that you can run energy conversion lab with him, as opposed to having that be on your leader, like with Palpatine, is a really big deal. Or again, you can run vigilance or whatever, but his rise, I think, is in part to the fact that he is the most flexible of what I would describe as the top end leaders right now. If you're looking for a control deck or something that goes a little bit late, you can either build them with command where you've got the, you know, traditional ramp game plan. That one I think is really strong right now when you're trying to game plan for the whole meta, simply because you can run overwhelming barrage and bombing run if you want, or you could just run barrage in the main and you know, bombing runs in the board, but you have a really good game plan against the Sabine. And then you still kind of have that ramp to deal with Boba Fett, or kind of go, you know, pace for pace with them. And it's like, yeah, they get their powerful turn five, but if you can just survive that, you're going to reestablish board control once your Vader hits. There's a lot of things that it really does well. So I think that what we're seeing ultimately is that the space where I think we all thought Palpatine and to some extent, maybe even Iden, where they were going to occupy, I think people are coming around to the fact that Vader might actually be the best option as like the third piece of the triangle.
I think it really does seem like, or that list at least really does seem like it's kind of a Swiss Army knife as far as like what it can handle too. I'm really excited to try playing it at some point. I look through it and I'm like, oh, this looks like just a really fun list too. So, which is super important. It has to be fun to play, right? But yeah, I think it's such a great, elegant little answer to a lot of things in the meta right now, like you were saying. And yeah, I think we're just going to see more of it.
I'm excited. I'm excited to have a more in-depth conversation for everybody to hear next week on Hello There, because Guy's going to join me and we're going to talk about it. We're going to go into the weeds on just the philosophy and stuff, because he's like, I got some time. I'm on my lunch break. Do you want to fire up a phone call? I said, yeah. So we just chatted, and it was so damn cool to just be amidst the, like, what an elite card player thinks about, how they approach deck design, and just matters of philosophy when it comes to approaching these kinds of things. And it's like, why this over this? And then they give you such an articulate answer that makes you feel like such a donkey. You're like, wow, this is why I'm not winning these big tournaments. But everybody can improve, and that's what's great about it. So I'm looking forward to that. I think the meta is in a very good spot. That's how I'm going to sort of close this out. I think that the fact that we are seeing a top 16 that is showing four different heroes is incredible. And yeah, it's the same two that are dominating, which is Fett and Sabine, but they didn't win the whole damn thing. So let's take that to the bank. Okay. That does it on episode number 45. Friends, if you want to catch the mailbag, that comes out every Monday, as we have separated that. So your mailbag, your bad feeling mailbag queries will be answered on Monday. If you want to, I do want to give big thanks again to our sponsor, Invasion Comics and Cards in Richmond Hill, Ontario, just a few minutes north of Toronto. You can go to invasioncnc.ca. Use the code ICECAVE5, get 5% off your Star Wars Unlimited singles and 3% off sealed product. And yes, they do ship all over North America, so go give them a shot. And again, thank you to our Patreon supporters. Go to patreon.com/icecaveradio. Join the Discord. You got extra content, extra unique access, cool perks, such as getting your questions read first on the mailbag, which we will be doing on Monday. Booyah. Not bad.
Booyah.
All right, friends.
Not bad.
You can catch us on Twitter at Ice Cave Radio. Check the Discord. I'm at Watchflake. That's at GGDOA, at that Charm3R, all the jazz. Give us a 5-star review. It has been exceptional, your support, and we appreciate it. Charmer, sure you're just bubbling with delight here. You've got some wisdom to share. So please, without further ado.
May the force be with you.